Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Knight, and I'm a realtor with Real Broker right here in Cajun Country, Lafayette, Louisiana. The goal of this podcast is to provide massive value by bringing insider access to our area's top agents and find out how they've been able to achieve massive success in their business. My hope is that you take away a few things from their experiences to grow your own business. My guest today is a friend and fellow real agent, Jalen Plaisance. Jalen is a top producer who works mainly in the new construction sector and has been helping her husband operate a successful building company for over 13 years. Jalen has really taken the team lead on training and is well-versed with contracts and the new changes with the NAR lawsuit. Welcome to the podcast, Jalen.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey, happy to have you back for part two because I told everybody I would get your story. You joined us first with the session that we had done on NAR and MLS. So go back a few episodes if you'd like to kind of hear specifically how we handled that transition. Here in Acadiana, Lafayette, Louisiana, we were one of the first MLSs in the nation to make the major change, and we were about a month early with that major change in regard to the NAR lawsuit. But if you guys want to hear more about that, we'll circle back a little bit later and kind of do a summary of how it went for us. But let's start by getting Jalen's story. So Jalen, tell us how you got into the real estate business and give us a little backstory.
So I worked with my husband, who is a builder with, you know, Van Allen Homes, for now like 13 years. After 8 years, we sort of had a conversation. It's one of those things when you're building the spec house, selling the spec house, selecting all the things, it's like, who knows your house better than, you know, you do really. So I really got my license just to list our spec homes.
Gotcha.
And then that sort of took off to a level that we kind of couldn't ignore, you know, in real estate. So then I kind of changed my focus a bit to become full-time in real estate. Obviously still, you know, listing our specs, working alongside him and stuff like that, but predominantly now focusing straight on real estate, not just, you know, our houses, I guess you can say.
Education was super important to you. So you really wanted to know everything you could know. And that's kind of why I think you kind of went into more of this training role as well with agents.
Yeah. And I think that that's sort of been a blessing and a curse in my life always. It's like my personality. It's annoying to me, you know, it keeps me up at night, but, in any capacity of my life, if there's something that I'm supposed to do or I have to do, I can't just unfortunately do exactly what somebody tells me. I have to understand every reason behind why we're doing it. I'm not questioning it. It's just like, I understand better when I understand every step to get to whatever I'm supposed to be doing. So it's like a consequence of my brain never shutting off. It's like, I become like this nerdy researcher. So at the very beginning, when I was learning like the contract side of real estate, which is really what separates that from the building side, in my opinion,
right.
You know, I'm learning and like, you put this in this blank and you put, and then I'm like, well, wait, why? And that's what started it. But it was just kind of like a follow-up to every other thing in my life. So, that's what started it. So now like, I just, fortunately, I guess, understand the contracts really well and the processes. And I'm a rules nerd, so that, you know, goes hand in hand. So it became like the designated office nerd.
Gotcha. Yeah, and then that's why you were kind of, you basically spearheaded this whole thing for our office. And you were like, hey, we at our company are going to be the best educated and the most informed on exactly how we need to do this to stay out of hot water with this thing.
Right, absolutely.
So you kind of jumped in and you were the team lead on the NAR, the changes and the settlement and why we need to do it a certain way and what form should we be using and what verbiage should we be using and all of that.
Yeah, because although it was great to go in a month early, and I think that was the biggest blessing we had here, that we didn't even appreciate it when we had it kind of thing. I think that the downfall of that was they were figuring it out a month later and we had to figure it out a little bit on our own. And I just saw a need there, and it's again, like my personality. So I enjoyed getting to learn all the things and understand. I think kind of quickly we realized it was way beyond just like our local real office and, you know, the other agents out there in our MLS who we love, you know, they're our friends. everyone kind of needed, I guess, like the guidance. Everyone was sort of in the same very confused boat. So that was kind of unexpected, but fun. Like, I think we all kind of enjoy getting to work with, you know, I guess people will say our competitors, which I don't consider them competitors. I know you don't. Right. They're all our friends. It was just this really weird, you know, concoction of random agents from random companies, random brokers, just working together to make it happen so that we could best represent our clients in like very much uncharted territory, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of agents, I think, look, they saw your leadership and your teaching and ability through even our first episode, which ended up being one of our top liked or listened to episodes so far, is the one on In It. Because everybody's like, hey, that's right now, that's the most pressing thing in my mind more than it's growing my business or like, it's just like, how do I even operate my business?
That's exactly right. So what does it matter if you can grow your business if you have no idea?
If you have no idea how to write a contract
right now, right?
Yeah. So I think that, and then maybe that was why too, I mean, other than, you know, a number of different reasons, but that may have been the one thing that people like really needed to hear your episode because they were like, I don't even know where to go.
Probably.
Other MLSs around the nation, I would probably say, were like looking to us and saying, well, like, how did it look a month early? Like, they're probably in the thick of it right now.
Right. I had so many people reach out the week before. So we rolled out, you know, a month prior, about 7 days prior to the national rollout, which was everywhere else in the state besides us also. I had people from all over reach out and they just wanted to know, how bad is it? Like, what's the, you know, and at that point, we're sitting pretty. That's why I was like glad we were, you know, 30 days ahead. Because we were like, oh, we're good now, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, even to just jump on it right there is, you know, how is it now? How are we now a month later? I know we said we'd circle back to this, but how is it now? Where are we? Where are we now? We're a month early, I guess. I mean, most people started at the beginning of August, right, with this thing. Here we are, middle of September. Right. You know, they're about a month and 15. We're, you know, 2 months and 15.
Yeah, like 75 days in. I'll say, as expected, the first 2 weeks were just not fun. We were very prepared, I feel like, or the people that showed up to understand or showed up to their own offices to understand and that were truly educated by their brokers, we were ready to go. But the problem with that is it's the people on the other side who may have had zero guidance, whether they just did not have any or they just chose not to attend, you know, or show up to learn these things. Some people didn't even know that it was going on. So I think that the first even 3 weeks was really difficult because every other side of the transaction had a different take version or had no idea what was going on. And so you're having to constantly kind of like help them out and educate them on what we should be doing, how to do their own transaction essentially. But I will say now it's kind of like we're getting used to it. There's a lot less of that than there was prior. So, I mean, you know, I think by the end of the year, we'll really be kind of coasting along. I mean, it's not my favorite thing, but it is our reality and we have to just make the best of it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think that I watched a video on, from Sharon, who's the president of Real. He said, you know, if we just basically just operate our business right now, just with a sense of grace and understanding. And yeah, somebody may not be as well-trained as we are, but you know, maybe it takes an extra phone call to say, hey, not seeing the commission in there that we kind of talked about. Is there a reason that the commission's not in there?
Absolutely.
Calling the agent and saying, hey, is there a reason that you aren't taking a commission right here? Because maybe there is a reason you're not taking a commission. Right. Maybe the offer, you want it to be more competitive or whatever. But I just wanted to, before we accepted this offer, having a little grace and saying, hey, what's, you know, do you have a plan with the commission?
Right.
Are you getting paid by the buyer? So it's little things like that. Like as a listing company, I do a lot of listings. So that was one thing that I personally did because I don't want to look, we've got to work with these people. Mm-hmm. We have to work with these agents and we want them to be well-informed as well, not just us.
And it's a tough spot, I think, as an agent to be in because the supposed idea of this entire lawsuit was to kind of keep us from having like these buddy-buddy, you know,
deals.
And to some degree, it's like helping them could come across in that way. But the reality is when we go under contract, I mean, let's be honest, 99% of the time we've negotiated a due diligence period. So even if we're, you know, upfront with them on the front end, we get an offer that does not mention, you know, compensation and we're the listing agent, it's really not doing that much of a disservice to reach out to them and say, hey, listen, you didn't, just making sure you're handled with your buyer, they're paying you, right? Because like, they could cancel that contract the next day during due diligence at no penalty to the buyer, right? So like, why put us all through that and start off on that wrong foot? You know, at first it was kind of like, are we supposed to say anything? Are we going to get in trouble if we say anything? And I'm kind of like, man, this is sticky, you know,
because... Yeah. Because you're doing what you're, you know, you're doing what you're best for your seller, right?
And that's very, and for me, I'm a rule follower. So I want everybody to do the right thing and go to the closing table all open and honest and fair. But man, that really isn't. And I know it happened here within our office. And
yeah, I remember talking to an agent in our team that was like, man, I had a contract.
And this is a good agent.
Like a great agent that said, like, I accepted a contract that was best for my seller. Yes, it didn't have a compensation in it, but it was an offer he was willing to accept.
And once we talked it through, it was kind of like, well, they did have a due diligence where they could have like canceled and, you know, whatnot. But this is day two of this going into effect. And unfortunately for her, it's thrown on her lap. You know, she knows what she's doing. She's super trained, and we're told, do not cross that line. You know what I mean? Do not cross, you know, yeah, you're friends with these people, but like, you've got to do best by your client first, and then you're their friend, right? At least that's what this lawsuit makes us feel like. This is what's supposed to happen, you know?
Right.
And so I felt really bad for her because she was put in a no-win situation. Now that we've kind of talked it all through, it's kind of like, well, and we're in it, we know that, like, you know, due diligence is going to kill that regardless. They're going to figure that out. So it's just better to have the conversation up front, and it's not hurting your seller because you know that, you know, they could cancel on due diligence, you know?
Yeah. Gotcha.
So, yeah. And that's just one take. I mean, it's going to be situational, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. And for sure. So I appreciate you taking the lead on all that stuff. And, that's great that you're able to dive so deep, because like you said, you were able to break it down for us in like bite-sized pieces that we can just digest, versus like me looking at that whole thing. I was just like super overwhelmed with like, oh my gosh, what should I do? What language do I need to use? And at that point, we're creating the language we need to use. So it's like, look, just tell me what I need to do and let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, so which was,
but
was
it was
great.
Fun. It was fun.
Yeah. So let's talk about the new construction a little bit, because you did a class for us, which I really enjoyed. Was you focused, that whole class was on brand new construction. So break down a little bit about what you went over with that class, because you talked about realtor-builder relationships, how to get a builder, all those things. So break down that class for us a little bit, because I know realtors are listening and they'd love to snag some value from you on your experience.
I mean, I think that the whole idea was to kind of give everyone an overview on like the different types of new construction. Is it a custom build? Is it a pre-sold? Is it a spec home? That kind of thing. And then really going over, because everyone's question always is, well, like, how can I get a builder? I mean, I'm just married to mine, you know, that was like kind of built in.
Right.
But this is what I tell people, that breakdown between, not always, but sometimes between the builder and the real estate agent relationship can sometimes be broken. You know, the builder carries a lot of liability for a very long time, financially, physically, all the things. Whereas it seems as though the realtor just like shows up, goes to closing and calls it a day. And so my advice to everyone always is, you know, respect that industry, respect their industry, that, you know, they don't know everything about real estate, whether they, you know, a builder does not. And the builder should respect that their agent has value, and that their agent knows what they're doing and is going to lead them on that real estate transaction. But that goes on the other side. The agent shouldn't assume they know a builder's industry, right? If they don't have any, they don't know how to build a house, if that makes sense.
Right.
So my advice always is, you know, number one, if you have somebody that would mentor you for free, you know, whatever, and be willing to let you truly learn their industry, but go and learn their industry inside and out. And bring that value to the table before, you know, you're representing an industry that you do not understand, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my biggest thing. I think that it's authentic. I think that it makes you know what you're talking about. You know, me and Jessica talk about this often. We obviously are both married to builders, and I've talked to plenty of builders about this. It's difficult when you've got an agent representing a builder and then an agent on the other side bringing the buyer, and neither one of them have really any real day-to-day building experience, because I feel like so much could be, you know, lost to the buyer, I guess you could say.
Yeah, for sure.
There's just so many details. Things have to be very specific, But to me, it's just respect their industry and respect that you don't know everything about their industry, if anything at all. But you can sell real estate really good and you can market really good. So get really good at your job at real estate and then turn around and then really try to learn the building industry and understand it and respect it. And you will go so far with those builders.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing I take from that class too, is just understanding like the pressure that these guys are under, right? Like
so
you
much.
Said,
Absolutely.
We're you know, making a sale and we're taking a commission from the meat or fat or whatever the situation. Mm-hmm. These guys are on the hook thousands, tens of thousands of dollars a month with these lines of credit.
Every single month.
And
yes.
And every month that this house is sitting there completed, they're under a huge amount of pressure to be able to hold on to these houses.
Absolutely.
So that was one thing I was kind of like when I thought about it like that, and it's like these realtors come in and want to get a builder, mm-hmm. but yeah, they're just wanting to get a builder so that they can get paid. And I think that's the wrong way to go about it.
I think it looks like a consistent form of like maybe like transactional income. And to some degree it is, but there is a lot of pressure when you do understand that side of it. You know, these builders, most of 90, 95, I'd say at least percent of them are on the hook every single month. They're paying interest, you know, when it's spec homes, and every month that house does not sell, you know, your commission isn't going down, but their profit is just depleting. Every single month they're paying interest of a house that is not selling. And that also goes, you know, we've had houses before I was an agent, you know, which I will say I strongly respect them on a different level being on the other side of it now, you know, but where people would bring us an offer and they would have like $15,000 worth of like upgrades they wanted to be done after the fact, all these things. And we're like, this is an agent that does not understand the financing aspect of a spec home, you know, and how all of that works and the appraisal side of things. And so it just starts off things on the wrong foot with the builder in most cases.
Yeah.
It starts like that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And in the class too, that you had said too, like in what ways specifically would you, if you were a newer agent or an agent that was experienced and wanted to get in with a builder, in what ways would you go about that? I think you talked about open houses in that class.
Yeah. And yes. And also, each builder's different. They run their business different. They're financially set up differently. Everything's different, right? So if there's a specific builder that you're going to ask for a meeting for, let's say to introduce yourself or to get their listings or whatever it may be, you need to really do your research and figure out what about that builder, how do they run their business? And you go in there and you explain to them that you not only know how they run their business, but you understand how they run their business and how you're going to protect their business. And go in and offer to do open houses for them. If they do not have an agent, if they do not have their houses listed, because some will try to, you know, not list for a long while. And there's a few builders out there right now who do not have an agent. They have not listed yet. Offer to do an open house for them, you know, with the proper paperwork to protect everybody. But show them that you're willing to work for that relationship and build with one, prove your worth, and then go from there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And even one thing that you had said too in there was like, hey, if you get a buyer that walks in that really likes that builder's work and everything else, but they don't like that particular floor plan, have them rebuild or build something else on another lot in that subdivision with that builder.
Absolutely.
And you said like, that's one of the things that, and I think realtors make a lot of mistakes when they're doing an open house for that builder. You are there representing that builder. So don't go like, hey, let me go look at the house across the street and I'll show that to you. And it's some other builder.
It's such an insult.
Yeah.
And to the builder. And I'm not just talking about my husband. Obviously I feel that way. It's my husband, but that's any builder, you know, I believe that an agent, whether you are representing that builder or you're like, hey, listen, I'm free this weekend. Can I host your builder's open house? It's your listing. You know, that happens every day, all day. That agent needs to be very much told, do not send these people down the road. Like the builder should have the first shot with them, you know, kind of deal, because they showed up to this house probably because of that builder. You know, they knew who built the house. They wanted to see the house. They clearly liked something about the house. Now look, if they walk in and say, this house is terrible, we would never use this builder, I've not ever heard, you know, that's a different story. But if they walked in to see this house for that builder, you know, bring them back to that builder, right? It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of agents, and there may not be any ill intent in doing that
at all. None.
And that's why I think a lot of realtors could fall into that trip hazard, is that yeah, they're just excited. They've got a client that, or maybe a potential client that's interested in this subdivision. And they're like, oh, you know, just excited about making a sale. But I think that's a trip hazard that you don't want to fall
and
into.
And I do think that that is the exact point of proving, like, if you don't understand that industry and understand how it works and understand how they get their business, then that absolutely can happen. And that's why it's important that if you're going to represent them in any capacity, open house, listing, whatever, like, that you understand enough to not, like, offend them, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. And even as a listing agent of these building properties, when you're getting these calls from these agents who want to do open houses, it might be worth going ahead and tell them.
It's absolutely
this,
a part of
the conversation. Yep. Hey, I'd be glad to set you up for an open house, but here's how it's going to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's your job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess talk to us a little bit. Yeah. And I mean, that's all. Is there any more on that topic that you want to go over before we?
No, I mean, I think that we have some really great builders in Acadiana. I mean, I don't know many markets that have the quality longevity that we do. It's a special industry here. And it's one that, like, as realtors, I know that they kind of, like, envy, because the builders genuinely get along. And, you know, we can't have this conversation without talking about, you know, we lost a main man in our industry, you know, last week, tragically. Today's actually his services, and that was Mr. Greg Manuel.
Yeah.
And there's not anybody in the building industry that was not in any way rattled by that. Great husband and wife, family business, great for our industry, great for our community. So, you know, just want to pay respect to him, because he was a great, great man.
Yeah. Super, super well respected. And even the business that he built was just amazing. Like, everybody, you know, in that particular building, and I know everybody in the industry respects him, but just when you deal with their people, yeah, like, you realize that it's people first. It's
right.
Making sure you're taken care of. It's making sure, but just like a lot of these other locals are, but yes, just agreed. Yeah. I think that was
a huge loss
industry, yeah, for our industry. And you know, I'm sure those services are going to be incredibly well attended.
Yep. And I'm sorry, today. I know we didn't talk about that, but when we were talking about builders, I'm sitting here like, I can't not, you know, yeah, give him the respect he deserves right now. Cause it's so real right now. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fresh, and yeah, everybody's kind of bummed about it for sure. But you and I both came from the brand of District South, which mm-hmm. was the core company that moved from District South to Real. Right. So I joined kind of about a year or so before that, the transition to Real. But let's talk a little bit. Let's get into the transition to Real, because you and I were both there. We've both been in the business for a little while. We both were, you know, you were at District South for about 5 years before the transition.
No, it was four, because this is my fifth year this month. So about 4 years.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's talk about the feeling that we had whenever District South took their whole brokerage over to Real. Like, what was your initial thoughts in that move? And then we'll talk about what our thoughts are now.
Yeah. Well, you know, in my 4 years there, for 1 year I left, obviously, and went somewhere else to do some stuff there. And I came back, you know, I'm so close to Carrie, and Paige is, you know, literally my work wife and best friend. And, you know, we really wanted to kind of, like, grow old together in real estate. And that was how I needed to be at DS for that to happen. So, you know, I came back and I was ready to literally, you know, die here. And then it was like, oh, by the way, we have a mandatory meeting. Like, y'all come here. We got to say.
This is recent after you came back.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I'm like, wait, what? We've never had a mandatory meeting. Like, right. What is this about? And they tell us, and I've always been so anti, and this is a personal thing, because I like seeing and touching, like, and all the things about, like, human interaction in the office. So I was always like, I'll never do
a cloud-based
brokerage or whatnot, because it just seems so not personal. And so at first I was like, but, you know, Carrie and I are just so close, and I just, I just absolutely adore her. And Sean, like, I joke, I'll follow, like, Sean's money anywhere, because, like, Sean, business-wise, his business sense is phenomenal. I knew if they were willing to give up a brand that they have nurtured, babied, loved, all the things, for something like this, I knew that I kind of went in blindly. At that point, I knew, okay, wait, they would never bring us somewhere that, like, is not going to be better, right? And so I just sort of, like, let's just make it positive and let's just see what happens. My expectations weren't that high, but I was like, if we're all together, then it's fine.
You know?
And we did. I think, like, almost everyone came together, and now I'll have to say, like, I mean, I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You know, like every couple of weeks, it was kind of like, oh, I didn't know we had that benefit, you know, because I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't really pay attention. And it's brought on so many like really cool characters within our industry that like, I just don't think we would have ever been at the same company. People that were like, you know, heavy hitters, great agents, done deals with. And like, even a month ago, I was walking through the office. And I was like, so weird. Like Steven's here, like working. Hunley's like working. Like we work together. Like I still forget, you know,
yeah.
Joel Bakke's next door to me. And like, that's been such a pleasant surprise. Like I would have never known him on a personal level. And he's like the coolest dude ever, you know? So it's just really cool to see, because we did, it's obviously like, what'd you say, cloud-based, but we kept a physical office, like a brick and mortar. And so we kind of have the best of both worlds, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is how, like, you know, Jessica Broussard came, and she had been with her same company forever, a company we all love and respect.
Right.
So Joel as well, of course. I don't think we would have ever gotten those people if it would have been just straight cloud-based, you know, because I think they also feel the
personal connection. Yeah, you need that. You
it's
need
necessary
that office.
For them too, right? Yeah. So I got lucky because they're kind of all in my corner. They call it the West Wing, you know, we are all kind of stuck over there together. And it's like, you know, it's a blast, to be honest, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And I kind of was the same way too. I came from a company, same thing, like a small local brand that was built, and you knew the owner and you knew everything. And I was with them for like 18 years. And then I finally, like me, like moving mountains takes forever for me to do, finally make the move to another small local deal in District South when I made the move. And I was with District South for a year. And then like all of a sudden, here's this major, major change. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to be like in this or not,
yeah.
You know? So it was a weird space for me to be in. But I'm like, look, same thing as you. I trust Sean and I trust Carrie and I trust that their decision was one of bettering our lives, because
right.
they're never gonna make a decision that's not gonna better our lives.
Right.
And then once I really just, it took me a couple of months to really just start kind of like figuring out the systems and everything else and, you know, kind of parting ways with what we knew.
Yeah.
But what it's opened the door to has been amazing.
Like
absolutely. From a national perspective, to like be connected to these people who are doing just amazing things. Like I was just messaging with a guy in Vegas, like this guy's like, I mean, killing it, you know?
No,
and it's just like to be connected to those people, be able to pick up the phone and say, hey, would you jump on a podcast with me? Like,
right.
he's like, yeah. Like, how could you ever get that guy to get on a podcast with you? He's with the same company as me.
Right.
You know, so he's willing to share.
It's so weird. Like, it's so weird, you know, because the only two companies I ever worked for were both
small
boutique,
local,
and like, and both companies were super invested in the community, awesome agents at both companies that I flipping love, but very like localized. And so I was like, man, I don't want to lose that. And we have not in any capacity, thankfully, because that was one thing that was important to me, was getting to like be still involved locally in our company. But then it's like so weird, because then like tomorrow we could literally go to Vegas and like, see all of our people. Like,
yeah,
it's weird.
And like we're going to Vegas. I know a couple of us are going, and Paige is going.
Yeah.
And Carrie, it's like we're all going to the National Rise conference in Las Vegas. So we're going to kind of have the, you know, to be able to be connected to that, like would have never happened on my local small local brokerage.
Right.
Like it, you know, yeah, I could have chosen to go to the National Realtor Convention, but like getting to go to like a convention where you're like, hey, this is all my company put on. And it's like just getting to hear like the heart behind it. Like I was listening to a podcast this morning with Tamir Polig, who's the CEO of Real.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just amazing. Like I just love to hear his heart and how they created the company.
Yeah.
Which I think you could go back and do some research on the and how they created Real, and just see the heart that they have for agents. And he even talked about something in that podcast, which I was like, that's crazy. Like they were like trying to build the company, and they were like looking at ways they could grow the company. And they were looking at spending, I think they had said around $500,000 a month on Google, Facebook, Instagram, like ads to grow the company. And then somewhere at some point that it switched to the model that we have now, which is kind of an agent attraction. Jessica likes, you know, Jalen. So she's going to have that conversation with Jalen, and she's going to come. And Jalen thinks enough about Jessica to get her and her family here at Real. So like the way that they flipped the model and said like, hey, we're going to make this where agents can bring on their friends and they're going to be the face of the company and they're going to bring, you know, high quality people to the company, but just not anybody. Like, I thought that was awesome. Like, that was a good move. And like, instead of spending that $500,000 that they were going to spend on Facebook or Google or whatever they were going to spend, they were like, we're going to give that back to our agents in revenue share.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was like, that's a crazy concept to think as a company. Like, you're at a crossroads right there. You're like, hey, me as the owner of the company or the top guys at the company chose to put themselves, put the agents first and not themselves first.
Right. Absolutely.
Which I thought at its core was like really cool. And I think the same thing happened with us at District South in that move was at its core, they chose to put their agents first instead of themselves.
Right.
Because they were making, I mean, they were talking numbers to us, but like they were making a lot of money off of District South because you had 40 or 50 of the top agents in town, all top producers, all contributing, all bringing money into the business.
And like almost, I mean, most people were capping and that's $22,000 off the gate.
Yeah.
Per
I mean, if you did the math
year,
times that,
it was a lot.
It was a lot of money coming into the company. So for them to go ahead and make that move, I thought said something about Real as well. And what the opportunity it was for us as agents in the company.
Right. I agree. And I do genuinely think it's like locally, like our office is the best of both worlds. I really do. Of like traditional brick and mortar brokerage type setup, localized in the community, but also we have every benefit, financial benefit, you know, from having this huge cloud-based company.
Yeah.
You know? And if you came here, you wouldn't know that. Like if you walked in our door right now or come to any of our meetings, it's like a normal, complete normal brokerage.
Just like a normal brokerage.
Yeah. Like a Lafayette brokerage. You wouldn't know that like, oh yeah, this is great. And this is fun. And this is like very, area specific, our meetings, of course, like, but then they don't even know that like there's an entire world out there that we could learn and do all these trainings and all these things beyond just locally, you know, which is just kind of cool.
Is there anything else that you might want to say? Because I know you do a lot of training. I know you do a lot of leadership stuff. But if I'm a new agent and I'm listening to this maybe for the first time and I'm struggling, what kind of advice would you give them? And then we'll close it out.
I think that, you know, it's not like the most favorable market conditions right now, especially with all the changes. So if you can survive right now, you will be fine. But I am a firm believer in, even though we don't have set hours, you work a minimum of 40, like, you know what I mean? Like we, most of us work more, but you should get up and you should be dressed and ready to go every single day, just like it's a real job. Like I get really offended when people like act like this is like a play job. You know what I mean? Like they like, I'm like, no. Like this is all day, every day. This is my job. This is my career. And when you're new starting out, that it's so important. Like do what anything you can do. If it's follow an agent around, if it's host an open house, if it's host an agent caravan for somebody, like you make yourself available to do anything anyone needs. And that sounds terrible, but like you will, number one, learn so much. You will have things to talk about. You will have things to post about that is authentic, not like fake social media. Like that's like genuinely you putting yourself out there. And you're going to eventually start having those same easy conversations with people in your life. And they're going to depend on you to answer questions about real estate. And then when they're ready to buy and sell, guess who they're calling? You. But make yourself busy doing real estate full-time.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And not playing around on social media and scrolling and whatnot. Finding content that would be valuable
but
to
just
share.
Making it a career. Treat it like it is an 8-to-5 career, period.
Yeah.
Now, listen, with that being said, some people financially do not have the ability to leave their full-time cush job and they love real estate. There is a way to do both until, but the goal should be to be full time. And if that's not your goal, then, you know, I don't, that's like, that's just not my, like, I don't think that that's a, that's not the, that's, I don't think you could
succeed.
I don't think that's the right thing to
do. Yeah. But anyway, I really appreciate you coming on and hearing more about your backstory. And I know we got into some of the MLS stuff as well. So I would just say, if you guys are curious about how Acadiana made the transition, or if you're curious about how to write a contract even, or to what language should you be putting in a contract, or if you're curious about maybe working with a builder, or if you're an agent that's curious about maybe trying to get a builder, I know Jalen's door is always open to chat. So I'm going to put her contact information in the details of the podcast. So Jalen, appreciate you being on the podcast.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So we're going to close with that. I really appreciate you guys listening. Please subscribe. Please follow. Please like. Give us a good rating. Give us some help because we're just trying to provide massive value to realtors in our market. And I hope you guys are enjoying the content. So I hope that you guys have an amazing day.